This is Total Information AM with Tom Ackerman. I'm Megan Lynch. Boeing factory workers voting today on a new contract to end a six-week strike that has cost the company billions. Joining us from Seattle, Chris Van Cleve, CBS senior transportation correspondent. Chris, thanks for joining us. So what's in the new contract?
Well, good to be with you. This is the proposal basically would offer a 35% pay increase over 4 years, 12% in year one. $7,000 ratification bonus, improvements to health and retirement funds, as well as a guarantee to build the next Boeing airplane here in the Pacific Northwest with union labor. What it doesn't include is a return of the pension fund, and that could be a deciding make or break point for many of the machinists who are going to go and vote on this agreement today.
What did the union want versus what Boeing initially offered, Chris?
Sure. So the union was asking for a 40% pay increase. Boeing's initial offer was 25%. The signing bonus has more than doubled. There was some bonus language that has been in and out. That's back in. There have been improvements to the health and retirement fund. This idea of a guarantee to build the next Boeing airplane here in the Pacific Northwest with union labor, that was a critical demand. What the workers have not been able to secure is a return of their pensions. It's something Boeing says is off the table. Some of the machinists we talked to today said, you know, the money's great, but if the pension's not in there, I'm voting no. The question becomes how many folks are in that category. Certainly, this vote is going to go better for Boeing than the last one did, where it was nearly unanimously rejected.
Well, and that's the next question then going forward for future votes for Boeing and its employees. Will this deal, if it's approved, make things harder in the future?
Well, you know, with this group of employees, these 33,000 machinists or so, it's hard to overstate the sort of bad blood between the two sides. The workers feel like at every step over the last 10 to 15 years that the company has squeezed them, that their earnings essentially stagnated while the cost to live in the Pacific Northwest just exploded with the rise of Amazon and other tech giants here. So they feel like they not only have to make up for lost time, but position themselves to be ahead of potential inflation and the continuing cost to live here in the Pacific Northwest. So that's really driving what's going on with the machinists. They're about 5% of the cost of building the airplane. So getting this deal done, they argue, shouldn't be make or break for Boeing. In the big picture here, you have a company that hasn't made a profit on a yearly basis since 2018, has stacked itself with debt. The new CEO has already said they're overstaffed, so they're going to cut 10% of their worldwide workforce. So certainly labor costs factor into that, but the costs for not getting this done, really it's staggering. Boeing announced a more than $6 billion loss just in the third quarter. Estimates from analysts say this strike will cost them $8 billion and counting.
CBS senior transportation correspondent Chris Van Cleve joining us from Seattle. Thanks very much.
Sure thing.
Well, getting around major cities via the air may soon be easier with air taxis. Bloomberg reporter Allison Versperl joins us now from Washington. Allison, first off, what are air taxis? Describe this technology.
So these air taxis, you know, they're kind of the electric version of what you might think of with a helicopter. They take off, they can go, you know, up and down vertical, which is why people call them electric vertical takeoff and landing aircraft. And they can move very quietly through the sky. So the idea that these companies are trying to promote is that, you know, in congested areas, you could take one of these rather than having to sit through traffic. One of the big use cases that they promote is, you know, being able to take an air taxi to the airport, actually, so to get on another aircraft. But, you know, a lot of interesting things happening in that space.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, it's not like the Jetsons or anything. These are like fixed wing planes that fly like helicopters. It's pretty incredible. Well, what about safety? How is the FAA stressing safety at this moment as it introduces these air taxis?
So the FAA throughout the whole process has said, you know, we're interested in the innovation of these, but we want to make sure that we can safely integrate with other things in the airspace. You know, if you're looking over the next couple of years, you have drones exploding, you have, you know, the traditional aircraft. And so one of the things that just happened was the FAA passed this major safety regulation. It included requirements for pilot training. It also included, you know, operational requirements for kind of minimum safe altitudes, you know, what, how many, you know, sets of controls you need in a training aircraft. And so those rules were made final yesterday. And it's a big step for the industry, they say, because it kind of gives them rules of the road going forward.
Give us a picture of this industry. What companies want to get into the air taxi market?
So there are two, you know, really large companies in the U.S., Joby and Archer, that everyone sort of thinks of when they're thinking about air taxis. And they've said, you know, that we could potentially see these flying in the U.S. By the end of next year, maybe the beginning of 2026. And but, you know, they do have investors in sort of the traditional aviation and transportation space. For instance, Toyota and Delta are investors in Joby. And then you have Stellantis, which is the U.S., the European car maker that owns Chrysler and Fiat. That is the largest shareholder in Archer.
Who has them now? Where do we see air taxis worldwide?
So you start to see them. There's been a lot of interest in the UAE. So you're definitely seeing other countries get involved. There's a big company called Lilium that's based in Germany. So the U.S. is definitely not the only company that's, or the only country that's interested in these. But what the companies were saying yesterday is that putting out these framework for them in the U.S. Allows the U.S. to kind of stay competitive with those countries.
Any hints that they're giving at this point of what cities they may start in?
You know, Joby, for instance, has talked a lot about transporting in New York and Los Angeles. That sort of makes sense, given that they are congested areas. I'm sure anyone who lives in those cities knows how difficult it is to get around. So those are some of the types of areas that they're targeting at this moment.
I feel like this goes way back, too, doesn't it? Allison, I think feel like we've been talking about this for like 7 or 8 years or something like that.
Yes, yeah, it's definitely been years in the making. I know the timeline for the target date of getting these flying has gotten pushed back a little bit, but that seems to be pretty common when you're talking about new categories of aircraft. And I think one of the interesting points that the FAA made when it put out the rule yesterday was that, you know, this is the first completely new category of civil aircraft that we've seen since helicopters were introduced in the 1940s. So I think the idea is, you know, people are excited about these things, but they want to make sure that they're incorporated in a safe manner.
Allison, thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thanks for having me.
That is Bloomberg's Allison Verspiel joining us on KMOX.
Megan Lynch once flew in an airplane reporting traffic. I wonder what that would be like in an air taxi.
I think I probably would have preferred that.
It's going to be fascinating to watch. Really good stuff there.